terrible million. I'm a very bad person. I'm beginning to see that. A very bad person. I wish I could be a good person. I mean, you know, you do. You see the good people all lined up out in front of Radio City Music Hall, all going in there to see Tippy and Whoopi and Dottie and Doris and all that. I send them a gun! Too many years in the steel mill have done it to me. I mean, too many years here in Studio 8 have done it to me, too, Al. You just can't go through this kind of hell and remain unscathed.
Send them a gun! Caramba!
What is it? Do any of you know what that means?
Caramba!
I think I'm going to run for... You know, speaking of running for something on the way... Yes, I've had ideas I ought to run for something. I don't know what it is. Just run for something. Did I ever tell you about the guy who one time on a radio show a few years ago... Oh, it's been like in the mid-50s, something like that. And he was out on the West Coast. And casually, in passing, he was talking along and he was laughing at all the idiotic stuff that was going on everywhere. You know, Congress and senators and all that stuff. And he... In passing, he says, I think I ought to run for something. And the next thing you know, there were 5,922 write-in ballots, and that guy is now in the U.S. Senate.
Son of a gun, Columba!
That's the truth. I'm telling you the truth. Didi Mo. And he is doing no worse than the other meatballs. The only difference is he's a member of AFTRA, that's all. He has to keep paying his dues. He's just bringing showbiz where it belongs. So speaking of showbiz, come on, bring him along. Come on. All right, hold it there.
Caramba.
Speaking of how much can you take, I'm walking past my desk, and I see there's a copy of one of these weekly serious magazines. Have you noticed that almost every one of these big magazines now has a circulation of more than 7,400,000? I think it's all the same people. They must buy them all. I mean, the same 7 million people keep buying the same magazine. All the rest of us keep just looking at the moon. And I see a copy of this magazine, and there on the cover is a touching picture of Elizabeth Taylor and her daughter. Oh, isn't that nice? And I can see the gigantic public relations wheels beginning to move again. I don't even have to look at the article. You know, almost all this stuff is so ritualized, Al, today, that you don't even have to read the article. You just pick up the magazine, look at the cover, and you've read it. You just read it. You feel kind of warm. You're sending this away. I can see the article already. It says that Elizabeth has at last found fulfillment in a truly happy marriage. And not only that, her children love the new daddy, I'll bet. I haven't read it, but I'm just sure that they do. And after a tempestuous, turbulent career, she has come to a safe harbor at last, right? Right. And she is secretly, and underneath it all, a very simple girl who has been only looking for love and the real one, right? I haven't read this, but I'm predicting what the article's about. And at long last, she has arrived at a beautiful marriage. I read that one when she married Fisher. I remember it was beautiful. They did that one there. That long time, you know, she finally married Eddie and was happy marriage at last. I remember, too, when she just finally achieved true happiness with Mike Todd. It's a hard struggle. She finally made it with him. And he brought all the things that she'd always been needing. I remember when she said, what was this other than Wilding? It's getting back into history. You know, it's like the, almost like trying to name the various Egyptian dynasties. It's very hard after a while, you know. But we keep repeating the same story over and over again. It gives you a sense of tradition, doesn't it, friends? A sense of continuity. Bring a little continuity music in there, please. Quack, 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 quack. Quack, quack. We are now saluting. With our special saluting music, fulfillment. And safe harbors that all young movie actresses arrive at after they're 7. There, that's very good. I think that clears the decks. And so we salute Elizabeth Taylor and her safe harbor. Didi Mo. Somehow you have a feeling that you're living in some gigantic playpen. Have you ever had that feeling? And somebody's got all the marbles, and all you're left with are the old used blocks and some dirty old sand. And speaking of the playpen, I see where, according to the New York Times, Sunday, April 5th, you now can buy Soothing Sounds for Baby, Volume 1, 1 to 6 months. You play it on, it's in stereo, just various sounds, you know, people sleeping and snoring and people banging pots together. This is for people who insist on having babies and who, you know, don't have the time to create their own soothing sounds like banging pots and snoring and stuff. You know, you got to get out of the house once in a while. And you can also buy Volume 2 for baby 6 to 12 months and Volume 3 for babies 12 to 18 months. And, of course, Volume 35 is for babies between 27 and 48. And many a guy sitting there with soothing sounds going on in his poor little stereo, same jazz all the way on up till the final day, you know. Speaking of that, did you hear about the guy? The dynamics of preserving yourself and the dynamics of the ever-expanding ego have finally now begun to show some genuine fruition, and I'm glad to see that. I'm serious. I mean, up to this time, you know, the only people who could ever express themselves were the talented. And you know how that is terribly undemocratic. There's nothing more undemocratic than talent, right? Stamp out talent! I'm telling you, I'm serious. There is many an artist, whenever you mention it, you'll notice the word talent is hardly ever mentioned any longer. They talk about energy. They use energy and hard work. In fact, there is in the current issue of Life magazine, there's a whole thing about a young sculptress, 30, and it shows her stuff, which are all 47 feet long and look like the wreck of a B-29. And they're all soldered and welded together and hammered together, and it says she works very hard. And that's enough. And I think that is enough, because a lot of people aren't working today hard. They just hold it there, fooling around, crowd. Does anyone know what the old word bourgeois means? Not bourgeois, not bourgeoisie, but bourgeois. B-U-S-H-W-A, bourgeois. It's not the same as bourgeoisie. My mother used to use that. She'd look at the cover of a magazine. I could just see her looking at the Elizabeth Taylor. Oh, bourgeois. That's her only comment. And that is also her typical comment when she sees one of these sweating plays. You know, the kind of play that is sweating with honest self-expression, terrible breast beating. You know, the Arthur Miller type play. I can just see my mother about the middle of the third act. In fact, her comment on Death of a Salesman covered it right there. Well, she came back. She said, Mr. Bruner's sadder. Well, Bruner was. You know, the one thing about Bruner, he didn't know that he should have felt sorry for himself like Willie Loman did. And if you don't feel sorry for yourself, nobody else will, friends. That is a fact. That, unfortunately, you know, they've often said that if you don't blow your own horn, no one else will blow it for you. You know, this old canard. So we got plenty of horn blowers around. And, of course, the problem is today that a lot of guys don't have much to blow horns about, so they don't blow horns. Now the next old canard that I think will begin to be stitched on pillow covers and various things of that kind will be, if you don't feel sorry for yourself, no one else will. Charge, if you don't have any self-pity, who's going to pity you? And so old Willie Loman led the race on that one. Followed by his creator. Well, anyway, my mother came home after about 17 acts of that one, and she says, Mr. Bruner's sadder, actually. But Bruner never knew he was. He just kept falling up and down the stairs with a snoot fall. He didn't know he was sad, you know. And he never really realized that he was a beaten, defeated man because he was on the extra board for 127 years down at the roundhouse. He never got on the regular board. And that's the truth. They always used to let him work the day after Christmas, and they'd get the year off to a good start. Oh, speaking of that, as long as we're on the subject, did you read about this guy? There's a guy that finally solved the problem of the eternal, eventual ego. He tape-recorded his own eulogy, which was played at his funeral. Yeah, he finally left, and they found that there. It was all taped in stereo. He had mood music and everything there. He said great things about himself, actually, too, because he figured that no one understood him as well as he did. And if anybody's going to talk about the beautiful soul that he had, by George, it was going to be him. So saluting all... Yeah, that's good enough.
All together, gang.
I always felt that that would be the good way to start a... Oh, that's enough, Al. That's enough. It's creeping in there. Yeah, sure. I'm not kidding you. This guy, they played the tape there. Of course, I don't know how people reacted to it. It must have been kind of embarrassing sitting around there, especially if the guy has a bad delivery, which most people don't recognize that they have, rotten deliveries. I mean, have you ever sat around and listened to an amateur storyteller? Oh, wow. I'd like to start a class on what kind of face you put on when a guy is telling you a long, involved, uproarious story. He hits you on the arm, you know, he says, "Hey, boy, am I got a funny story I'm going to tell you." And he hits you on the arm, you know. And what do you do then when you're standing there and he starts out with this long story? I can't quite remember it. He says, the guy said, he was a bartender, see? And he said to this guy, one is green and long and swims, and the other guy... And you know, no. And somebody else is always correcting him. No, Charlie. Remember, don't you remember? They went to the ballpark. Oh, yeah. And they, what kind of a face do you get when that happens? It's a very difficult scene to act. This is when the average man is acting. This is acting. Standing there and pretending that you're amused. Do you get an amused look on your face? Or do you keep busting out with these big, and he hasn't come to the punchline yet. Speaking of bad storytellers, this is WORAM and FM New York. And we'll be here for a while. That is. Don't you worry. I've got a stronger contract here for crying out loud than the 23rd floor receptionist. And I'll be around here. And while we're on the subject of that, I would like to point out that, among other things here, see, sermon played at funeral, pre-taped by dead man. Oh, of course, he was an ex-city councilman. He didn't want anybody to rat-think on him there. You know, in the last couple of minutes, the truth to come out. So he taped it all there for them. Oh, speaking of taping, I received a book, which I think some of you might like to know about. It's a book. I'll bring that in tomorrow. It's a book of speeches for all occasions. And, you can eulogizing speeches, political speeches. You can get political speeches of all types. And I will come in tomorrow night. I think I'll deliver a few speeches, garner a few votes. And while we're on the subject of garnering a few votes, this is Tuesday, see, and this is catching up with all the various interesting things that have been happening week, night, time, period. And among other things, we have a letter. We don't often read letters from listeners. Here's one from Helen. And she's a chick, and she says, "Dear Mr. Shepherd, and I don't want to embarrass you out there, Walt, but this is a report from what is happening in the other world. You see, once in a while I get a report from one of the spies, and I read it on that thing. And you know, it's funny. I'm sure a lot of daddies and mommies, you know, big fat middle-aged people, have no concept of what is going on out there, you know, in the convertibles and everything else, when the kids all go away, and they think it's just like when they were kids." Well, I will read this to you. "There are things going on around our school that I think you should find very interesting, Mr. Shepherd. First, there is a new craze concerning the girls. They are now all smoking pipes. The girls carry these pipes in their pocketbooks along with little gold lame tobacco pouches." And she's, of course, referring to a series of programs we've been doing on the blurring of what we call the identity, the basic biological differences between... Well, in a couple of weeks, the school is giving a dance formally called the Big Switch. I thought that name was very suitable until I heard the new name. It's now being called Dante's Inferno. Guess who asks who? Yes, the girls ask the boys, who, by the way, are very pleased with this idea. Rules for the dance are, one, girls must buy corsages." And she says, and underlines it, "not boutonnieres, corsages. Girls must provide transportation and perform courtesies. Girls must pay for tickets and refreshments afterwards. At the dance, they are going to crown a Prince Satan." And her comment is, "the contestants are very sweet and the kind who wear fluffy yellow sweaters in the halls. By the way, walking down the hall today, I saw a boy wearing a yellow marigold behind his right ear." And so we are saluting yellow marigold wearers among us. He's warming up for Lexington Avenue. Hey, be all right. You go over big in the agency. You know, this is from a girl, by the way, in case you're interested who wrote it. It was a chick, so she's got her eyes open. And along the same lines, did you see the there was a piece from one of the Jersey papers, and it's one of these, well, you might call it almost the Norman Vincent Peale approach, in which anything that happens is good. And it's the best of all possible worlds. Dr. Pangloss is always with us, friends. He's always got a doctorate, too, I might add. And it shows a picture of, in school activities, it shows a picture of a bunch of girls standing around, and they've got saws and hammers and acetylene torches, and they're wearing helmets and all that stuff. It says, girls taking classes in shop and metalworking at the, I don't recall what high school it was. And underneath it is a picture of a bunch of guys mixing a cake, a bunch of boys mixing cakes, and they've got the powdered sugar there, and they've got the ground coconut, and they're also, it says, boys in cooking class learning how to make Boston upside down cake. It says, yes, regular cooking classes have been instituted at the Whoopi Consolidated Clifton High School in New Jersey for all the boys who've been clamoring to take cooking. They're so delighted, especially with the new department that teaches them French cooking. So wonderful. And it says, oh, a girl's been wanting to learn how to weld. And so it's marching on. Let us salute marching onwards and upwards with the arts and with ladies and people department. Did I tell the story on the air about the big piece in the magazine from Canada about the house husband? Did I tell that story? Did I? Didn't I? Well, did you see the big piece in the Canadian magazine? Somebody sent it to me from Canada. It's a big laudatory piece about a guy who's finally advocated, and he says, "I am a house husband." And he says he was so unhappy at work, he wasn't making it, and they were yelling at him all the time, and he kept coming home and biting his fingernails. And his wife finally says, well, all right, dear, I'll go out and work. You stay home and make the doilies. And so now she is out there and making more money than he ever made. And he says, I'm the happiest man in the world. Absolutely the happiest. And I love to cook. And every morning I get up and I go with the rest of the housewives to the supermarket. And I've learned how to save those little pennies. And I have a wonderful time. And I practice my putting in the afternoon. And Jane is loving it, too. And there's a picture of Jane with her short hair, you know, and her spikes she's wearing, chewing tobacco. And I kind of like these little things. I really do. I like... man is an adaptable creature. He's more adaptable than the cockroach. And, of course, there are some parallels between man and the cockroach, which we do not wish to bring up at this time. But it has been said by other species on this globe that between the two of us, the man and the cockroach, hardly which of them knows which is the worst. And the polar bears have really got a gripe against us. Seriously, I mean, it's very difficult being a squirrel in the world of cockroaches. And how do you think it feels being a rabbit in the world of Ed Sullivan? Well, anyway, it's going upwards and onwards. And, there's another great picture here from the Daily Journal, Elizabeth, New Jersey, Friday evening. It's the Elizabeth Daily Journal, April 3rd. It says, QT's clear table. Area women have been returning to centuries-old game of pocket billiards, as evidenced by this scene at modern high-Q billiard lounge on Rahway. Pleasant surroundings at most Q assignments, etc., etc. It says, bring a general revival of billiards among men and women. And there's a picture of the pool room there, Al. And it's one of the long shots. You can see 37 tables all lined up, and there ain't a man in the place. There's 128 women. It says, revival among men and women. When did it ever die among men? Well, it died among men when the women came in the pool room. That's what I'll tell you. That's when. Because, you see, I think the one thing women miss about playing billiards and pool was the fact that it was genuinely a retreat. When you went into the pool room, when a guy went to the bowling alley, when he went to play billiards or pool or snooker, this was definitely like going into a completely different world. It was a world of cigar butts, spit tunes, yelling, and a couple of bucks on the side. on the number 7 ball in the side pocket, and it was a complete different. Well, that's all gone now. It's a clean limb game, and it's all played for the game's sake alone. So I think we must salute once again. Yes, indeed. We're saluting them all here. And along that same line of saluting the... I shouldn't really do this, but a couple of nights ago, we had a visitor up here, and again, I'm reading the letters from listeners here tonight, and this guy makes a terrific point. And he says, I wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed your parody of Western radio. He means California radio, with the rock and roll variety, so on, the frenetic tones, the ball scores with no team names, the ridiculous contests, etc. Real, mighty real. I wondered at the time if you've been exposed to the phenomenon of, quote, religious radio. I don't mean the occasional 15-minute or half-hour bit or the Sunday night religious programs on most radio stations, but rather the solid 24-hour Christian radio station, quote. There's one in Portland, Oregon, and I know of several in California. There must be a lot of them now, as it is a good-paying proposition. There's a large enough market out there of floating Christians, visitors of the various tabernacles, plus all the adherents of the revival centers and the Pentecostals, full gospel assemblies, churches of Christ, etc., etc., enough of a market to respond to, quote, Christian, end of quote, advertisers. Oh, yes, there's a whole new side of it. Yes, for all of you Christians, come to Charlie's Fruit Store, where good Christian apples are sold by, and, you know, this is very, very fascinating new business breaking out. Local businesses and stores, so you have commercials, thousands of them, plus the income from paid time in 15-minute or half-hour pieces, mostly tapes. You get everything on these stations, from the really big bugs like Billy James Hargis, A.A. Allen and Company, down to the Great Pyramid Boys, the Anglo-Saxon Fellow, and the real little ones from local or regional tabernacles. Then there are long stretches of music interspersed with the commercials. Instead of the Charlie Brown Hour or the big swinging good guy time of a regular station, they'll call it the Master's Melodies. Or Singing Faith, Allah, etc. No lack of discs, of course, for this kind of thing. The anti-communist, quote, Christian crusade pitch comes in very strong also in the tape material. Well, it's quite a phenomenon, and in itself, he goes on to say, it's very hard to satirize, perhaps because it is itself so much a satire of religion of any brand, as most of us know it. But it does illustrate a few of the kind of seed thoughts you deal with. For instance, a really serious person would get a kind of intellectual colic from listening long and having thrown at him in rapid succession Bible Belt fundamentalism, the Great Pyramid, fortune-telling with the books of Daniel and Revelation, and a few other choice oddities. But people are immune. We all are subjected to our own kinds of insane barrages without much colic appearing, or the topic of languish. Do you notice how people adopt the dialect and vocabulary of others and other groups they are with at any given time? Have we nothing to say but want to say it in the other fellow's dialect or idiom? Or are we estranged and trying to establish a connection? Well, the religious radio boys have found that a fervent Southern accent has never lost a buck yet. A Scots accent is extremely good on all religious programs. We had a Scandinavian tabernacle operator in Seattle for a long time, Brother Ralph, who had a beautiful Southern brogue. And then there, of course, is the forensic matter, like the man they used to have on in the Back to the Bible Hour, I think it was, who used to put the devil on trial every Sunday and would address the radio audience as Sir. Now I appeal to you, sir, is it not the act of a reasonable man to conclude? And pretty soon it would be the hand on the radio while all the rest of it was going on with the great sounds of recorded music. Oh, I might point out to you that the man who wrote this to me is a well-known Presbyterian minister from up in Massachusetts, so he has all the right to say it. And he makes a real funny point. He says, as one of these religious guys is going, he says, now I appeal to you, sir, is it not the act of a reasonable audience, a reasonable man to conclude? And pretty soon it would be the hand on the radio. Put your hand on that radio while we offer our prayer. Suppose lightning struck the place at a time like that. Could the survivors sue? That's an interesting question. Boom! You know, the hand of God. For the departed who had his hand on the radio just then? A moot case indeed. Well, let me tell you, I know a guy. You know, you got to be careful of putting your hand on the radio. As a matter of fact, I know a guy who one time laid his hand on his radio. And it seems that somewhere during the night, one of his bleeder resistors had opened up, and he had a condenser that was leaking a little bit. And he laid his hand on that radio right on the top of it, right in the middle of one of these fervent wishes, you know, come forward, put your... Boom! He got a shock that knocked him across the room. He slid out across the front porch and out on the lawn. Before... I mean, seriously, oh, you mess around, put your... What would you call it, an accident? An act of God? Retribution for secret sin? I don't know. You know? Or he says, what about implied warranty? The sufferer had acted in good faith, depending on the advertiser's suggestion or claim. He got hit by lightning. What do you do? This is the minister. Very good point there. Well, I want to tell you something. Now I'm going to... I don't know whether I've ever told this story or not, but I'm going to tell it. That at one point in my checkered career, I guess you wonder why... Sometimes I may make an occasional reference to the kind of religious radio, which is sometimes very funny. But back in my checkered career, I happened to, at one point, one hot, long, purgatory-like summer while I was in college, I got myself a job in a Midwestern radio station that specialized in religious program. Of course, they didn't do any of them themselves. They put religious programs on the air like other stations put on rock and roll, literally the way the minister says here. And I'll never forget how it used to work on a Sunday morning when I had the shift. You see, they'd let me come in, and I worked like 115 hours a day. And since I was the extra man and only working in summer, I'd get all the rotten shifts. Like I'd open up the station on Sunday, which is truly the salt mines of all existence. And I would work all over, and the religious programming would start somewhere around, oh, I'd say 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and it would run straight on through to 1 a.m. the next day, and it ran hour after hour. Every 15 minutes there would be a new one, and they would run all kinds of wild denominations, you never... And now we bring you the hand of the silver trumpet hour! Well... these things used to come on, and here's the way I would work. Now, here's the way the inside would work. We had two studios, and these studios were separated by a wall, and in each studio was a big glass window where I could look into both studios simultaneously, and I was the engineer and the announcer on duty. Now, most of these shows were live. And I would set up my little table at the door in the morning. I had a little table with a cash register. No religious show gets on the air. It's cash on the barrel head. That's a fact. They pay before they go on the air. And I would have my little cash register, and I would sit there with the log, and I had little receipts and everything else, and I'd sit there at my little desk, and I'd have the transmitter already warming up. Al, I was a combination man, first class phone. I got the transmitter warming up in there, and we had this little Western Electric 250-watt rig, and I've got the studio equipment all warming up, and I've run all the audio tests. You know, I play the test. Now, everything's fine. We're on the air now. You see, we go on the air at 8 a.m. on this radio station, and it is now 7:45, and the ante room is already filled with the rabble of the first three programs. Tall, skinny ladies bearing trombones, short, fat ladies with tambourines, all kinds of guys wearing overalls, guys wearing high white collars and wearing long black silk suits, and they all hated each other. They all hated each other, and I had to keep them all separate. You see, there would be the voice of the Golden Pyramid over here, and there would be the Back to the Sea of Galilee movement would be in there. And in the next one would be the silver trumpets of the eternal rest are over here. And boy, they really, I'll talk about, you see, they were not only fundamentalists, they all basically hated one another, like, you know, Christian charity did not extend to the Great Silver Pyramid crowd. Each group thought that the other was a supreme blasphemer. And so naturally, Christian charity did not extend into the direction of a blasphemer. And so I would come in through this sea of seething hate. Now, it was professional jealousy, really, in a sense. It was like if you get a Ford guy and a Chevy guy in the same room, you got problems. You just got problems. It doesn't work out so good. And so I would come in and I would set up my little table and I would say, Reverend Watkins here? Is the Reverend Watkins here? And I'd hear, yes, my son. And the Reverend Watkins would unline. All these guys, I don't know where they got their doctorates. They were all doctored. And either they made out their own papers or something. There must be a place in Kansas somewhere where you can order a doctorate of any variety, any denomination. Have you noticed how many guys? They're all doctors. Everyone, this, yes, my son, the Reverend Dr. Watkins is here. And he would come up. And he would take out his big, fat, old, brown leather billfold, and he'd say, and how are you today, my son? And I'd say, very good, very good. Now, here's your receipt. And I'd put it down at $17.50. This was a 15-minute show, $17.50. And if they paid $22.50, I remember the prices, that included an announcement fore and aft by a professional announcer. Guess who? Delivered in unctuous tones. 1750, it was a bald show. They opened it themselves. They closed it themselves. We kept our hands off. And so this was a 1750 show. And so then I would say, all right, now, Reverend Watkins, you go into the Studio D over there. We had Studio D and E, our only two studios. You see, we had it made it sound like we had a lot of others, you know. A, B, C were somewhere else, you know. Go into Studio D. Yes, my son. And this whole crowd would go into Studio D. You see, the tambourines and everything. And they would all go, and the trombones would go. And then I would say, is the Right Reverend Good Doctor Smithson here of the Voice of the Silver Trumpets of the Pentecostal Sea of Galilee movement here? And he was, by George, and this is a Babbitt kind. Yes, sir, how are you this morning? How are you? How are you? How are you, kid? How are you there? Oh, good morning to you. Well, then the next one, of course, is the tight-lipped voice of doom and sin is everywhere announcer. He was a very, you know, this reverend, or he was always, yes, yes, sir, yes. What'd you say? Wait, well, all right, yes, yes, I have the money right here. I have the money right here. You say Studio C. All right, so you say, all right, folks, all right, let's go, folks. Let's go, come on, quick, let's go, folks. Sister Murphy, have you brought your tambourine? Sister, yes, all right, yes, sir. Would you please turn the microphone on? I want to hear how they sound. Please turn it on. What do you mean they're using it in the other studio? I said, please turn it on. I want to hear how they sound. I am not going to tolerate this sort of thing. What do you mean? Oh, all right, then we'll stay here until you turn it on. And I will be out in 2 minutes if it is not on.
And, of course, they all had their own way of being. And I had my little cash register. And each one that would come on, I would go, boing, it would ring out, see, and that really registered, see, and I would put the money in the little drawer, and I'd shove it back, and then I would go in, and I'd, the transmitter's all warmed up now. This is my little business that I'm running. I'm running the entire show all day long. Not a single person came in the radio station all day until 8 o'clock that night. I was on 12 full hours, and I had my own little business. It was a very interesting feeling. And then I would go in, and I would watch the clock, you see. And then I would give the opening announcement. You know, I'd put the carrier on here, our big solid 250-watt carrier, way down there, just a little bit north of the police calls. We'd come on, you know, just a little bit north of the police calls and just this side of the taxi cab service. Our station would come on the air. And then I would say, good morning. This is station, and I would give the call letters, brought to you under the auspices of the Good Happy Times Sacramento Broadcasting Corporation, under the jurisdiction of the Federal Communications Commission. I was very official. And then I would play, ta, 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 I'd play the Star Spangled Banner, and then there would be a long pause, and then I would tap on my turntable this giant trumpet. I had a set of giant recorded trumpets. And they're very worn, scratched, old world transcription, Al. It was so worn, so scratched, that you could see through it. If you held it up to the light, you know, and it was gray with dust, see, with old groove dust, you know. I try to, every day, try to make it a little better, you know. I'd take a cloth and I'd wipe it off. Oh, boy. And it and then I would say, the voice of the silver trumpets of the Lord, the Sea of Galilee, Pentecostal movement, is on the air. And then the trumpets would fade down and say, good morning, sinners. This is the Reverend Dr. R. W. Williamson here today. And I am going to speak to you on this lovely AM morning on the Sabbath day. I am going to speak to you of sin and the 20th century man. But before we go into this, I would like to tell you that I want to thank all of you kind folks who have sent us money throughout the week. We could not have continued these broadcasts, these wonderful words of healing and cheer, if it had not been for the thousands of wonderful people out there in the great radio congregation. And before we begin today's sermon, I would like to have our choir, the great silver trumpet hand and Lord of Sea of Galilee Pentecostal movement, now sing for you number 17 in the book. And then in there, I would put on the transcription. He had his own two little transcriptions. Where he got them, I don't know. And I'd play this transcription of this gigantic choir. It was like 18 million voices recorded in some giant cave somewhere in Europe. They come on. It sounded like he had 17 million people in this enormous, tremendous edifice somewhere, some Gothic cathedral, and I'd play this, you see, and then he would say, he would always pretend they were there, you see. He would say, and I'd like to thank the choir for beginning our program this morning in such a spirited and lively fashion. And now, friends, I would like to say to you that when you feel that sick sensation of being lost and alone, and he would start out. And of course, I leap now. I know he's good now. I've got his sermon in there, and I know he's good for his 15 minutes and then some. And I would jump up, and I would run out, and I would go into Studio D, you see, and where the great silver pyramid and the Sea of Galilee is warming up. And this, he's heard the angry one. This, hey, wait, I've heard you turn on the microphone. Please turn on the microphone, please. Would you please, Sister Murphy, would you please play on your trombone so that I can go into the control room to hear how it sounds? And she'd go, wah, 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 wah. And he gets up and he goes into the control room and he says, would you please turn it down a little? I said, but sir, I'm riding gain here. There's a certain technical thing. He said, would you please move the microphone? Wah, 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 wah. Well, and then by that time I could see the ante room is filling up with the next crowd. This crowd comes in costume. They wear long purple robes and they have chrome steel halos that are soldered onto the back and they stick up. And this crowd comes filing in. It's very hard, believe me, at 8:45 in the morning, when the Grand Pharisee arrives and he's wearing a giant golden crown with silver balls on the top, and he's got a little light bulb that lights up with a halo going. You know, it's very difficult to keep a straight face. My job is just to take the dough. And so, and to look, yes, 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 Grand Pharisee, indeed. And after a while, don't for one minute think that I'm being sacrilegious at all. Now, again, I'm going to get angry, a lot of angry letters. But I'm merely saying that this is the kind of radio that you hardly ever hear discussed. And nor do you ever know how it actually works. Well, by the end of maybe about 4 o'clock now, there has been about maybe 15 or 20 various angry groups go through the studio. Some of them are not. Once in a while, there is one group, one great group, I'll never forget that group, the group of Universal Unction and Love. Did I ever tell you about that one? They came floating in on a cloud. Seriously, I don't know where they got the cloud, but the group of Universal Unction and Love would come floating in on their own little silver and gold cloud, and it would be sprinkling little raindrops and dew and marigolds over the path as it came. Well, they would come in, you know, and I would sit there, and they would sit amid all these angry guys, all these different people, and they would sit there and smile at all of them. How are you this morning? And how are you this morning? And how are you this morning, little girl? And the little girl would be, of course, a member of another sect. And the mother would say, come here, come here, don't talk to us. How are you? And about 5 o'clock that night, I've racked in maybe $500 or $600. I've got it all going there in my little notebook. And then one sad little group would come in with no money. You know, they would come in, and this would be a little group. They'd bring a trio, and they'd bring a little boy who comes in to give the testimony or something. And they would stand in front of me. I'll never forget one morning, this sad, sad group. They had $16, and they needed $17.50. And I am earning $12 a week, cool, you know? And the guy looks at me in those watery sort of blue eyes, you know, and he's looking at me, and it's the tabernacle of the eternal vision or something. And he looks at me and he says, I don't know what we're going to do. We're just a little short this week. You think you can trust us, really? Do you think you can? And, of course, I had to account for every last cent. You know, I had this. I had a bookkeeping system, so I reach in my pocket, you know, and I got $1.17. I says, well, all right, Reverend, well, the station will make up the difference. Just be sure to bring it in next week. I want to thank you so much. Oh, may the Lord have mercy. May the Lord bless your soul. May the Lord... By the way, I never collected. This would happen about every third Sunday, and he would forget from Sunday to, may the Lord bless your soul. And then they would go on and sing, and I'd sit there, you know, knowing that it's Needix again, you know. It's the White Castle again for 3 days.